Income investing has never had more tools. Covered call ETFs, multi-asset funds, active fixed income strategies. And yet, most advisors are still building portfolios the same way they did 5 years ago. So what's actually happening on the ground? I'm Pierre Daly. This is Insight is Capital. And our very special guest today has the data to answer that. Jillian Del Signore is the Global Head of Investor Distribution and Insights at NASDAQ Indexes. And what makes her perspective unique is that she doesn't just sit on the product side of the table. She runs NASDAQ's advisor research, surveying hundreds of financial advisors every year on how they're actually building portfolios, allocating to income, and adopting new tools. She is NASDAQ's voice of the advisor, sitting at the intersection of index innovation, ETF distribution, and real behavioral data. And what that data is showing right now is fascinating. Advisors are shifting from, for example, total return thinking to something that looks more like paycheck replacement. ETF adoption is accelerating, but there's still a significant gap between what's available and what's actually being used. Whether you're an advisor trying to benchmark your own approach or an investor wondering how your portfolio is being constructed, this conversation is going to give you a clearer picture of where income investing is heading.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Jillian, welcome to the show. It is so great to have you. I'm excited about our conversation today.
Likewise, Pierre. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Jillian, before we get into it, maybe tell us a little bit about the arc of your career, how you got into the industry, the business itself, and what is it that wakes you up in the morning before your alarm goes off?
It's a great question. Usually my four-year-old on that last question. No, in all seriousness, thank you. I celebrated 26 years in the business earlier this year. I've spent my time at the likes of Federated Investors, Goldman Sachs. I was over at JP Morgan. I was one of the early founders of that ETF business. So I ran distribution.
Wow.
When they had only about two products in market, and was there for 5 years building that out, learned a lot, built a lot. And that was really, really fantastic. And then I got to NASDAQ about 2.5 years ago. And I have had the pleasure of running our global distribution efforts. And what that means is we and my team, which is a global team, I have two individuals in London and two in Hong Kong, and then a number of folks in the US. We are working to reach the clients of our clients. So what does that mean? Our clients are asset managers, ETF issuers, insurance companies. And so their clients, specifically my team's mandate, are financial advisors, which we're talking about at length today.
Right.
And retail investors. So direct to retail, and how are they, how are we accessing them, providing educational content, research, right, on topics that matter related to our indexes, investing, financial literacy, all of the above. My team is separated into a couple different groups, right? So I have a set of folks who are working directly with salespeople at ETF issuers. So they are, their clients are salespeople, and we're educating them and working with them, be out in the field, telling the story of the products we have in common. So think about the NASDAQ 100 or, the NASDAQ Cyber Index, right? We're out there talking about these indexes alongside those that have created products off of them. And then I also oversee the NASDAQ Dorsey Wright sales team. So many advisors listening today might be familiar with Dorsey Wright.
Right.
NASDAQ bought NASDAQ Dorsey Wright in 2015. And I have the pleasure of working with those six salespeople and overseeing them and their day-to-day with advisors. They're talking to hundreds of advisors every single week and bringing back that intel. My team is responsible for bringing back what we call voice of investor, right? What are we hearing from investors and how does that shape what we're presenting to the marketplace, indexes that we're launching, content that we're writing? And that's the last piece, is content. So I oversee our index insights team. So those who are writing content on portfolio construction, portfolio implementation, index methodology, all of the above to educate investors, advisors primarily, on how to use our indexes, the products that track them in portfolio.
Wonderful. That's quite a full plate.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome because we get to stay on the pulse, right? Like you said, I have the real benefit of hearing directly from investors and how I have an advisor council, right, that we work with and counsel with regularly to help us understand what their needs are, both product and otherwise.
So how does your work connect to the advisors and the investors who ultimately use these products?
Yeah. So my team from a Nasdaq Dorsey Wright perspective, they are in the field daily, right? Talking to financial advisors and about the Dorsey separate accounts that we run, about the Dorsey ETFs that we manage. And then, of course, some Nasdaq index ETFs. And so they're out in the field daily talking with financial advisors about these products, about their needs, practice management, portfolio construction, all of the above. And then my team of wealth specialists, the ones who are working directly with the salespeople at the issuers, they're in the field as well, indirectly, right? They're in the field with right. these financial advisors, but via the salespeople at these issuers. And so they're out there also delivering the content from our insights team. Again, we produce weekly content on the NASDAQ 100. It's obviously our flagship product and one of the biggest in the world. And so we have content weekly coming out of the team that we're out there talking to financial advisors and retail investors on the goings on inside the index, right? What's impacting right. stocks of which are held inside that index? How do you think about implementing something like the NASDAQ 100 more as a core holding in a portfolio, which we're seeing a lot more lately? So a lot of things along those lines.
So, Jillian, Dorsey Wright is interesting. Maybe for those who don't know exactly what Dorsey Wright is, what is it that your partnership with Nasdaq Dorsey Wright? What kind of intelligence are you getting out of that service?
Definitely. So Dorsey Wright is a wholly owned part of Nasdaq as of 2015. And right. we have a whole number of different parts of that business. I oversee the salespeople. We also have a whole research team that is facing off with advisors and helping them utilize the research and content that's coming out of them as a research engine, right? So we have the Nasdaq Dorsey Wright portal that investors can utilize to build portfolios, to follow up. So I guess to back up, at its core, Nasdaq Dorsey Wright is an RIA asset manager built on technical research, right? So momentum investing. And so they have a whole platform of which you can utilize to build portfolios, to do portfolio screening, a whole host of things that you can do through the platform to manage portfolios and do research on your products through the lens of momentum investing, but also not through the lens of momentum investing. If you use the portal, you can also just look at all ETFs and mutual funds through just a research lens, right? If you're trying to understand and do right. on products. They launched a free version of their platform about a year ago. And so you can now access the model portfolios and some of the research tools free of cost through their foundations platform. And so we have the sales team that's talking about the research platform as well, but then we have a whole host of analysts and portfolio managers that are managing the products, talking with advisors about the research portal, writing research multiple times a day for those Dorsey advisors who are following the research and making portfolio changes based on what they're seeing through the momentum lens.
Yeah, Dorsey Wright was one of the early pioneers of extensive point and figure charting, right?
Exactly. And, right. I didn't want to get that technical. But yeah. Good. Yes, exactly. Point and figure. You will see a lot of point and figure on the portal and in the emails.
Yeah, it takes a little getting used to, but once you get the hang of it, of the O's and the X's, you start to see where you know those signals, those relative strength signals emerge in stock charts, as opposed to looking at simple line charts. Yes. What you actually see is something that's irrespective of time and more respective of actual stock price movement and volume. Yeah.
You're absolutely spot on. And we actually, you said, host relative strength institutes around the country in different cities in the U.S. A couple of one every couple of months. And so we get get advisors together and talk about that, talk about the platform, macro trends, et cetera. So yeah, it is. It's great. It's a wonderful, wonderful team, and they have incredibly strong relationships with financial advisors, provide a lot of value there. So we get great intel on their needs through those relationships.
Yeah, and it's a terrific tool to lean on for portfolio construction and decision making.
Yes.
Jillian, you and your team at NASDAQ, you survey hundreds of advisors every year on how they're building their portfolios. What's the most surprising thing that the data is telling you right now about how advisors are approaching income?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So we did a survey in 2023, and then we did the survey again in 2025. Asking all sorts of questions on income investing, right? How are you? How much are you allocating? What tools are you using? And we were able to compare those results. Largely, there were a couple of questions that were new. The one that I really wanted to have a comparison to was the one on options, which we'll talk about. But unfortunately, right. We didn't. So when we redo the survey this year or next, we will certainly be able to have some comparisons there. But a couple of things that really surprised me. One, we talked about earlier about the NASDAQ 100 becoming more of a core conversation. That was actually what we were seeing. I think income as a category, which can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, right? And I recognize that. But income-oriented investments, the amount allocated was going up significantly. So 60% of respondents, which is several thousand financial advisors, are allocating 20 to 40% of their portfolios to income investments. And that's a full 52% from the last time we surveyed them in 2023. So what it's telling us is income investing is becoming far more core to the portfolio. And I think as we delve into, I know you mentioned in your intro, sort of this paycheck investing, I think that this will sort of make a lot more sense. But the core part of the portfolio, I think, was really starting to become it's surprising, but not surprising, right? As you see folks looking to get more out of their equity allocations, for that matter, right? Looking for income from an equity allocation. There's so many different options in the market right now, I guess, pun intended, around all things that we're seeing, but there's so much to pick from, which can be paralyzing at times, quite frankly. However, there are a ton of options out there for investors to select from. And so because of that, the increased choice, I think you're seeing it find its way into more core parts of the portfolio. So I think that was certainly a surprise. The use of ETFs. So we're seeing the use of passive and active fixed income ETFs go up significantly. Two-thirds of those surveyed said they're using passive ETFs. That was up 16% year over year. And active ETFs was over half. So 56% of those surveyed were using active ETFs, and that was up 7% from the prior year. And the active ETFs, I mean, if you look at the early days of active ETFs, a lot of them were fixed income. And I know when I was in the field, I would always, talk to advisors about what they were using and how they were allocating. And I feel like it was always still active for fixed income. There was always that desire for active management and fixed income. And I think that shows itself in the way that we're seeing ETFs utilized. Not that you're not seeing huge allocations into the passive, behemoths of the right. bag and whatnot, but certainly the active ETF allocation is going up. So the increased usage of ETFs expressing to me an increased comfort by advisors to use ETFs outside of your general plain vanilla equity, which is a great trend. And then finally, the options-based, which I think falls into that category of active. So whether it's buffered or covered call or hedged equity, we are seeing just an explosion of derivative-based ETF usage to generate income off of parts of the portfolio that are not fixed income. We have seen nearly 600 launches over 2024 and 2025, which I think, to be fair, can be slightly skewed when you think about the buffered ETFs coming out with such rapid nature, right? They come out every month or every quarter, these buffered products launch. So I think it's a little bit skewed, but the trend is there, right? The trend is absolutely there and to the right in terms of launches, over 200 in 2024 and over 250 in 2025, with the trend continuing into places like auto callables, for example. We're continuing to push the envelope. Right. And the ETF vehicle, that ETF wrapper, is lending itself to these derivatives in a more liquid, transparent way for investors.
And these are all, correct me if I'm wrong, but these are all defined. I mean, what we're talking about is a rise in popularity of defined outcome products, defined outcome solutions.
That's part of it. Absolutely. I think you're getting the defined outcome, which is absolutely was sort of the tip of the spear, right? If you think about these products, right? The defined outcome, the buffers were absolutely the tip of the spear. And then you started to see some of the covered call products, some of which have a more determined set of income, right? Others fluctuate a bit. And then you have more of the auto calls, which are generating the income off of the benchmark of an equity index, right? So the derivatives continuing to come into the wrapper and provide income in more unique and dynamic ways. But yes, the tip of the spear was absolutely this defined outcome. And I think, again, that sort of dovetails into more of a paycheck looking outcome.
Yeah. It's interesting just, you know, thinking on, you know, what was the catalyst that gave rise to advisors looking for more defined outcomes for their clients, and likewise the client wanting more defined outcomes. Yeah. Because we had this extended period of 10 plus years where interest rates were near zero or at zero. Absolutely. And you know, that really sort of distorted things in perhaps the equity market in terms of how you value equities and how growth equities got valued. But it also caused the problem for that cohort of investors who are nearing retirement or in retirement as to, you know, okay, where am I going to get that Bangin' Rule 4%?
Exactly.
Right? Where am I going to get, where's it going to come from? And so, you know, I see there's a very strong correlation, of course, between, you know, the rising popularity of derivative-based income, covered calls, for example, over the last 10 or 12 years. And now that we're in a period where yield has come back, it's become a bit of a shrug, which is like, okay, yeah, we can go and find fixed income, traditional fixed income that's yielding 4%.
Right.
Maybe even 5. But then I'm subject maybe to duration more than I'd like to be. Mm-hmm. And so the covered call income is, you know what? It's working. It makes, you know, when markets are volatile, we make more yield. We can reduce the call, you know, the call writing when the market's more volatile. We can increase it when we need to. So it's interesting to see, you know, like the ship is slow to turn. And so I found your revelation, and I mentioned it at the start. We've touched on it so far with the shift from total return thinking to paycheck replacement. And you know, I think I might have just buried the lead on my question, which was what's driving that.
You're spot on. And I do think, you know, some of these covered call products have been out for quite some time, but I think this explosion has really picked up in the last number of years. And it's really showing us that investors are willing to give up a little bit of upside to make their equities work harder for them, right? And give them income off of that allocation. But I think what's driving the shift is like, it's almost a human shift, right? If you think about it in that way, right? It's demographics.
Yeah.
Right. This cohort of investors moving to a decumulation phase, right? So if you think about that, it's not how much money do I have, how much have I accumulated? It's can this support my lifestyle right now,
right,
and into the future? They've experienced a variety of volatile markets, right? Which can be challenging to stomach. If you think about I'm always interested in like behavioral finance. I can't eat or spend total return.
Right.
I can spend monthly cash flow, right? I can live off monthly cash flow. And so I think framing wealth, I talk about it with my financial advisor too. It's like, can I pay for my child's private school, or can I pay for his college, or whatever it is, you know? So I think it's a matter of really making investing feel more tangible, right? Versus, you know, we were talking earlier, like more esoteric, right? I can't live off of my total return. So, but still knowing that they need to be invested in equities. And so what a great way to be able to do both with these products that we've seen come into the market. So I do think like this whole demographic shift, longevity risk, volatility, sort of reality check, right? And what does that look like? What's your ability to stomach that? And then more than anything, this sort of behavioral component that I personally can relate to, right? I'm sure many can. This idea of not being able to necessarily support the idea of surviving, eating, living, total return, right? Versus more of this paycheck concept. So I think you're seeing some products come into market outside of this, what we've talked about with derivative income, that are more intentionally driven towards paycheck and meant to be that regular income, whether it's traditional fixed income, covered calls, multi-asset income, whatever it is. And I do think you're going to continue to see it come out from more and more ETF issuers.
I think given what we're talking about, you know, like given what we're talking about, the paycheck replacement has some interesting byproduct, right? Which is that maybe one of the big things that it does is it helps investors stay invested as opposed to every month thinking, you know, as to your point, you know, I can't eat total return.
Absolutely. Right? And think about an advisor, right? The value of that, right?
Yeah.
Conversations with your clients to be able to keep them invested and keep them from picking up the phone all the time and asking what's going on in the markets, right? Which I'm sure happens a lot, especially in times of volatility, like we've experienced the last few months.
And it reduces that urge to sell something every month. I mean, if we're looking, you know, at one of the key advisor challenges for especially for their more mature clients that have matured with them over time, you know, that sequence of returns concern is always there. You know, what if there's a huge drawdown in the market and I have to sell assets for income at the worst possible moment? And then how long will it take to recover? We're talking about a much larger portfolio construction question here, but that concern of you know, that I think clients have always had, that advisors have by proxy, is that, you know, if we don't have to sell something next month or the month after that or the month after that every month to get that income that you need or, you know, to meet your needs, then we don't have to visit the prospect of selling something at the worst possible moment, if and when that time comes.
Absolutely. So it's smoothing out of that experience, right?
Makes for a much better conversation with clients, your point. Like, I think
absolutely.
That's, yeah.
I reflect back on my days as a salesperson, right? And spending time with financial advisors and talking to them about things like emerging markets equity or commodities or things that they would always say, I don't want it to be the one line item that's lit up in red that I have to talk about, right? Yep. And they would rather get it in some sort of model or, you know, they wanted to avoid at any cost, understandably so, those sorts of conversations that would lead a client to say, sell it, or I don't want it, or whatever it was, right? And so I do think that a lot of this is such a valuable tool to advisors to help their investors stay invested.
Yeah. Now, You brought up active ETFs. We've talked about a little bit about covered call strategies. So there's no shortage of these tools available today, you know, whether it's covered calls, active ETFs, multi-asset income. It's no surprise that you know, advisors have had a yen for active bond ETFs or active fixed income ETFs. It's to your point earlier, it is an opaque market largely. You know, I'm always surprised still to find out that you know, bond trading, bond fund managers are still talking about the fact that the bond market is an over-the-counter market. It's not an electronic trading system. There's phone calls involved. There's people involved. That you know, every bond fund manager picks up the call. You know, I've got I've got 500,000 of X at five. Did you want it? Right. And, you know, they know each other. And so the relationships are still, you know,
still there.
Table stakes for these guys, for these, not guys, but these traders.
Yeah.
And these fund managers. So It's why do you think, like, going back to my question, which is, you know, in terms of this proliferation of new solutions that are available in the market, especially for income allocations, why do you think so many advisors are still underusing them for the most part?
There's a couple of reasons. One is education. I always sort of lean back to this idea, because there are so many in the market, that the onus is really on these issuers to be out there educating these advisors on not just what they are, right? Because I think a lot of advisors grew up in a world where income was bonds and equity income was dividend stocks, right? And so this sort of flies in the face of that. And so it's how do you sort of educate them on what it is, get them over the hump, the fact that it is derivatives based, right? And that this is something that is going to deliver, which certainly most have. But where does it fit, right? A lot of the conversations that we have with folks is like, well, where do I put it? We are seeing more and more of them become core, right? At least a complement to that core. Let's say you own a NASDAQ 100 and then you own a NASDAQ 100 covered call strategy, right? You can complement what you're doing, or another equity index, for example. So we are seeing a lot of issuers that we're talking to spending a ton of time on education, especially if you think about those that were doing the buffers, right? How these things work. A lot of them have tools on their websites. A lot of those that are running the auto call strategies now have tools on their websites. So you're finding a ton of time, again, rightfully so, going into education to help advisors understand what they are, how they work, how they're going to deliver, and then where they fit. So I think that curve is happening, right? And I do think it's going to be a bit of a hockey stick, and we're starting to see it, right? You look at the volume of assets that are flowing into this category. It used to be very dominated by a select few. Not to say that it's still not, but you're seeing a lot more diversity across the products that are getting a lot of the flow. So I know within our suite, we have a variety of these types of products, and they're all largely being very successful. And those that are being the most successful either are kind of a brand name, right? And advisors were used to these strategies in other formats, other vehicles, and also are getting highly educated on how to implement, and or are really leading the way of education, and have sales teams in the field talking to advisors about how these things work, right? How can I explain this in 30 seconds to one of my clients, what it is, how it's going to work, why they should be interested in using it, right? So I think those are the folks who are going to win. And separate from this conversation, those who are really actually penetrating retail are also having a lot of success. If you look at individual investors, they're no different than an advisor talking to their investor. The same thing holds true, the desire for income, the desire for that consistency of the paycheck type income. So you are seeing a significant slug of the assets go direct to retail.
It's funny. I remember a conversation I had in Canada with one of the issuers in Canada. Well, at that time it was Horizons.
Sure.
And they had launched a covered call ETF. They were one of the first, mm-hmm. at least in Canada. I know, you know, buy right strategies have been around for
in the US
for 35 years, maybe, right? But it's very different when you're launching sort of a covered call ETF that doesn't write the whole portfolio, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't trade away all the upside. And that's been one of the, you know, if you go looking for information on covered call ETFs, that's what you find, is that there's still those long-standing criticisms of, you know, trading away your upside in order to get that call income. And I remember thinking, you know, I'm talking 2010, around 2010, I remember thinking, you know, you really need to spend a lot of time educating on this. First the advisor, then, you know, arming the, you know, equipping the advisor with the ability to tell the story to their clients to get them on board as well. So get the advisor on board, get the client on board. Of course, things have changed dramatically since then. And you know, advisors have gotten up to speed on these things, but it's been a long on-ramp, right? You know, like, even like you mentioned buffer ETFs, that's a long on-ramp. So is auto callables.
That's sort of the next frontier that we're seeing. The buffers, right. I mean, look, some of the buffers, at least in the US, are still not approved on certain platforms. You know what I mean? So it's definitely been a long road for these issuers. And auto calls, they're taking off really, really rapidly here as well. And I do think, again, it's sort of this hockey stick effect where advisors are using these sorts of products in different flavors and they see the opportunity. And to the credit of the issuers who are launching them, they're doing a lot of education around why this makes sense and where they fit into portfolios. But I think there's just this deliberate nature of advisors really looking to figure out where they belong, right, in a portfolio. And I think it's not long before we start seeing them fit into models. Right now, I feel like when I talk to folks, it's like, yeah, they go in my income model, right? But there are, you know, but now more and more conversations that we have, like some folks on my advisor council run model portfolios at some of the home offices, and they've talked about the fact that they are starting to get more core, right? They are starting to make their way into non-income models, right? And just into general models that they have for the sort of the volatility dampening in some funds as well, which is a sort of a byproduct sometimes.
I think the other contributing factor to the length of time that it took for some of these solutions to get adoption, to get whole, you know, widespread adoption was compliance and the compliance landscape, both in Canada and the US. I'm not sure which compliance framework is more onerous. They're both onerous, but you know, advisors have to justify suitability. They have to justify, you know, their know your product knowledge. They have to justify, you know, they have to be able to defend everything they do. And you know, that is maybe also part of the reluctance, not reluctance to be on board and understand what these products do, but to be able to digest it themselves and then be able to make it all make sense at every step of the, you know, at every step of the decision tree. And the very last thing is actually, you know, okay, I'm going to go in front of my client now or my clients.
And I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah. Right? And that might fail, you know, if I don't,
it all has to come together, right? The issuer has to be able to educate the advisor in a way that's simple enough for them to educate their client, but then they have to have access, right? That's what you're talking about, is just simple access, right? And even the compliance
folks is one, like, okay, there's the advisor, but the compliance team has to get on board too, right? You have to get everybody on board.
Absolutely. And luckily, again, this is all sort of up and to the right. So we are starting to see far more adoption and advisors' voices carry, you know, I mean, so if they're pounding the table for certain products, you can tend to see within reason, right? Some of those things get a bit more attention from the compliance part departments and to do a bit more research on those things.
Yeah. So Jillian, if you could change one blind spot in how North American advisors think about income investing, what would it be? That's question part one.
Yeah.
And what are you hearing from advisors as to what they're looking for to support their needs?
Yeah. I think what we're hearing the most, and I think maybe this sort of dovetails into the first one, is there, if I talk to, you know, my Dorsey team and what they're hearing from advisors every day, it's certainly not more product. Right. I think it's like it's helping them distill the what's in front of them, but they're seeking partners. Right. So they're seeking partners. They're seeking firms who can provide them multiple sorts of products, right? Multi-vehicles, multi-discipline, and can provide them research to support that. And then above and beyond, like, how do I, like we were talking about earlier, how do I support my clients? Are you helping me message to my clients? Are you helping me build my business? Right. So I think it's as much as I think asset managers, like, they just need more product. No, they need less. They need less. They need more education. They need partners. And what we're seeing is them starting advisors, I'm painting broad strokes clearly, but generally speaking, it's this desire to distill that number of partners down to something that feels manageable and that they can get all that they're going to need. Products, multi-vehicles, multi-discipline, support for my business, for my clients, all of those things. And so That is something that we continue to really see folks leaning into. And when they're asking us for things, it's almost like, I trust you, right? We've developed that trusted relationship. I trust you that this is a product that could make sense in my portfolio. Help me understand where it fits. Help me do that portfolio construction. Do you have a tool that I can use to do due diligence? Do you have a service that offers me the ability to do that due diligence? Do you have the ability to help me understand portfolio construction for my clients? Or flip side, do you offer me models? Can you help me build the model? Can you offer me the model, right? Yeah. I think a lot of advisors are interested in building their book and don't want to be a portfolio manager. And so this incredible, again, up and to the right, that we're seeing by way of custom models is really extraordinary. It's not a new phenomenon. It's been around for a decade more, well, more than that. But we're really starting to see, speaking of sort of compliance departments, people pushing advisors towards more model-based investing, where they can, to my point earlier, getting rid of that one line item, right?
Yeah.
How do we build a model portfolio to the table that can help my client achieve their goals? And I, as an advisor, can spend more time servicing my clients, finding more business, and leaning on my partners, like a NASDAQ, and other asset managers. How do I lean on them to help me make the investment decisions? And so I think that's really what we're continuing to see. And income investing is certainly making its way as a much more significant component of those portfolios in that conversation.
Any interesting, real world stories from your work? Like, I can't help thinking that there's like advisors are, in order to bridge the gap in their knowledge and their evolution, advisors are leaning into the expert help.
Yes.
At the issuers, right? They're leaning into the relationships that they have with the expert wholesalers.
Yes.
In order to, and to your point, to build model portfolios, to get on side so that they can be on side for their clients and be able to demonstrate to the clients that things are, how things are on side, where they're getting the support from and the backup. Have you got any interesting, maybe even funny stories?
I don't know about funny stories. You are seeing now. I mean, I guess anecdotally, if you look at the marketplace, you are seeing ETF issuers structure themselves as such, right? You have these generalists who are managing the relationships with the advisors, and they have a whole slew of specialists, ETF specialists, SMA specialists, model specialists, who are there to be that dedicated partner to a financial advisor. And so you are seeing the marketplace react to these needs of advisors, truly react to the needs of these advisors as they're expressing themselves daily and sort of what they need. So I think that's been interesting. And I give a lot of credit to issuers for doing that and being able to respond to that and build their businesses, sort of moving away from a traditional model to more of this specialist model where the advisor is saying, I really need the support in different ways, right? This is not an environment where I just need you to provide me with some fact sheets and entertainment. The distribution has fundamentally changed, right? That's a whole different conversation. But a key part of that is, frankly, what advisors have been telling asset managers and ETF issuers for a decade now, is that we need more intentional support on these unique vehicles that you're bringing to the table. It's one thing to bring me these ideas, but you can't just put it down and walk away, right? I need the support on figuring out where this goes and how you can help me with my practice.
If you look around at the ecosystem in the ETF and even in the mutual fund space, it's no surprise that, the wholesaling team, you're seeing an increasing number or even a proliferation of CFAs.
Absolutely correct.
Right? I mean, so that's fiduciary support.
Yep.
By way of the CFA charter holder.
Yep.
That is, institutional fiduciary support that every advisor can lean on.
Yes, 100%. And a lot of these firms.
I mean, I think it's underestimated.
Oh, it absolutely is. And yeah. I think if you look at it, I even have colleagues that have gotten CFPs, right? Back when I was at other firms, right? To really be able to come out through the financial planning lens, right? To support the advisor in that respect. But you look at a lot of these firms and they actually have, whether it's called portfolio insights, portfolio strategists, whatever they are, right? Every firm calls it something slightly different. But they will intake an advisor portfolio and deliver back suggestions on how they might be able to tweak the portfolio to optimize for whatever particular goal. Because that's really the ultimate question is, what is that advisor trying to achieve for their investor? But there are many, many, many firms now provide these turnkey solutions to advisors to help them make those decisions and then also support them through these specialist interactions. So it really has become, those that are at the top doing it well are doing it really well, right? And I think the advisors are seeing that. And you're seeing that by way of advisors' loyalty, right, to those firms. Those are also the firms that are providing the product, not just the product, but the support. So you are certainly seeing that play itself out in real time. So I think the bar has absolutely been raised and it's at the urging of the advisors. So I give credit where credit is due to them voicing and then those firms actually listening.
Well, this has been such a, we talked a lot at the pre-chat, but Jillian, this has been such a great conversation. I think, for those advisors who haven't realized it yet, I mean, there is a prolific amount of support available to them and their clients to do all sorts of incredible work. I wish I had that when I was an advisor.
When you were there, I know.
You know, exactly. When I compare, my time to today, I don't think there's been a better time to be an advisor. You don't have to be all things to everyone in order to provide a level of service to your clients that is superlative, because there's so much superlative help that you can lean on, and companies and teams that you can tap into to make your services expert, fiduciary, comprehensive, and to free you up to spend more time unearthing your clients' deepest needs and building their relationships.
Absolutely.
Jillian, thank you so much. It's been delightful to have you on the show.
I love these conversations and certainly add NASDAQ Index to the list of those providing that support. And so we're here to listen and really digest that voice of investor to help provide more to those on the front lines, right? Financial advisors. So thank you all for listening. And thank you, Pierre, for having me.
Thank you.